Berry Part 2 with Mr. Tevis. So flexibility is the one thing you're going to take with you out of here. You wanted to talk about some hoist things. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I forgot to mention during my stay here, my crew and I were the only ones, to my knowledge, that have done hoist in this section of Afghanistan, especially combat hoist. I mean, our unit practices it whenever possible, but we've never actually done it in combat, to my knowledge.
For the audience, what you mean is you actually had to hover over a particular area that's a minefield, and you had to extract the wounded Marine from there. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And going back to flexibility, we launched that day for a routine medevac where we thought was a FOB. And then midway to the POI, we learned that the grid had changed. And then when we were within 5 miles, they requested hoist extraction. So we asked them if we could land somewhere else. They said no. The field's littered with IDs. We haven't had time to sweep it, and we need hoist. So
there you go. You take off from here, what you think is going to be a routine mission, landing at a FOB, a normal landing zone, and now you got to change in midair and do a hoist mission, which is not easy.
No, it's not. And it required us to leave our medic on the ground for some time so he can prep the patient.
And basically in the middle of a minefield.
Yeah, it's a minefield, IEDs. It wasn't swept. And we had to hold a hover over right in the middle of town. Wires all over the place. And no one in the crew had done this before in combat. So there's a lot of differences between practice and combat that not a lot of people realize, but we got through it, lived.
When you completed that particular mission and you brought the patient, I assume to here or another location?
No, yeah, this guy was a double amputee, so he's missing two limbs at least. And usually when there's an amputee, they bring him back here regardless of what, so we can stabilize him.
Because it's a shorter distance, you can get him the first care here and then on to the next location if possible.
That's correct.
End of that day, how did you feel?
Well, after that mission, everyone was relieved, congratulating the crew that how well it had turned out for something so non-expected. You know, you don't wake up and expect to do hoist. And then within an hour later, we got another call. Same area, same unit, same location. One of the guys, because the area hasn't been swept, hit an IED or a mine, and it was a triple amp this time. So same crew, we had to roll back out there. And I'm glad we had talked about the things we did, the things we liked, and the things we didn't like with that mission. You know, we call an AAR, after action review. I try to do one after every flight, especially with something as unique as a hoist mission in combat. So we talked about things we could have done better, things we didn't like, and things we did like. And then when we had gotten this call, another unexpected mission, we executed the things we learned.
All in the same day. Two unexpected things in the same day. But that's typical in combat.
Yeah, that's typical in combat. I mean, these two missions were within 2 to 3 hours of each other.
When you were in flight school training to be a pilot, did you see yourself doing these kind of missions? Did you ever anticipate that? And if you did they match up to your expectations?
No. In flight school, I was more worried about just trying to control a helicopter on a calm day, you know, and I didn't think about what actual combat was going to be like. I mean, everyone sees the movies, you know, Black Hawk Down and Vietnam, Dust Off, and all that, but when you translate it to real life, it's kind of different. I mean, from my first deployment, it was pretty uneventful. I expected, you know, to do more cool things in my first deployment, but I was just a regular mechanic. So I kind of expected the same thing for this one. It, you know, sort of low-key, but it's been a great experience.
Gone into LZs that are hot?
Yeah, hot LZs. One time I was waved off after they said it was cleared. This was at Dwyer, not here. Yeah, even landing in the wrong LZs where they haven't swept it, that's happened to me before. Because sometimes the ground guys will pop smoke prematurely, and then the smoke lingers over, and when you come in for a short final, where you think it is and where it actually was popped off, it was great distance in between. So,
again, flexibility.
Flexibility, yeah. Just do what you can. And on that mission, we had the ground guys line up literally in a straight line, and the lead guy had a minesweeper, and they were sweeping mines as they were walking towards their aircraft.
Okay, so that's really an amazing scene. You're watching this go on. Here comes the minesweeper, and you're thinking, hope he doesn't hit a mine as he's coming up to the helicopter.
Yeah, I would not have forgiven myself if that guy had blown up in front of me. Because it's one of those things, another mistake that you learn from. It's like, all right, next time if we're not, clear, just pull back up and request smoke again to get an exact location. So it's another one of those things, flexibility.
This is a very unique mission that you as an Army aviator are involved in, supporting the United States Marine Corps. What kind of bonding did you come out of the end of this deployment with this kind of experience working with the Marines?
What I first noticed when I got in country, this region of the country, a lot of the guys, the Marines, are younger than me, and I consider myself pretty young, 24, but these guys were literally straight out of high school, basic training, and then thrown into here, and I've picked up a couple of guys younger than me, and a couple of guys older than me, and they're a tough bunch, and I have grown to respect them more than I've had before. These guys are very resilient, and they're willing to do the things that they do for the country that, we all serve. And I understand we all have different jobs, and we signed up to do the jobs that we're doing now, so it's voluntary, but still, like, the things that these guys go through, their living conditions, what they do every day, what they're deprived of, it's just amazing.
What does the future hold for Warrant Officer Tevis when you get back? What's next on your list?
I applied for a university in Phoenix, Arizona State. So that's pending, but I plan on finishing school and getting an engineering degree after this.
Will you stay in the Guard and keep flying?
I hope so. I plan on staying in the Guard, and if I get a full-time job in the Guard, then that's great.
A word of advice from now an experienced combat dust-off pilot to the next young man coming up at about 18 years old wanting to follow in your footsteps. What do you say to him?
The biggest thing I've learned throughout this whole deployment, not just Eddie, is to not rush things. Follow the checklist, follow the procedures, because they're there for a reason. And if we start letting the mission get to us, the adrenaline, the rush, the anxiety, then we start to make little mistakes that will compound and cost an aircraft and 4 or 5 lives. So that's the biggest thing I've taken away from my entire experience in this deployment, is that when a mission comes down, just take a deep breath, think about what you have to do, where you have to go, and how you're going to get there, and take it step by step.
Final question, what's the first thing you want to do when you get home?
Take a really hot shower, barbecue, and drink beer.
Well, if I was there, the first one would be on me.
Thanks, I appreciate that. I look forward to that.
Mr. Tevis, thank you for taking time out to speak with me on here, and wish you all the best in what the future holds for you.
Thank you for this interview and being out here with us.
This is Jim Sperry, March 5th, 2012, Forward Operating Base, Edinburgh, Helmand Province, Afghanistan, speaking with Ryan Tevis going down to Dwyer.